Welcome back to the programme. We're into the second hour this Monday. Hope you're all very well indeed. Thank you so much for listening, or if you're just joining us, good morning to you. We were talking to Councillor Michael McBride. He highlighted a case of a woman that contacted him. She was in a road traffic collision. It was a single vehicle collision. She wasn't injured, but the airbags did go off. A good Samaritan in good faith rang the fire service, and this lady, even though she didn't need the services as such, ended up with a bill for €1,580, and he's wondering if this is fair. As it turns out, according to this lady's insurance, and your insurance might be different, her own insurance, car insurance, didn't cover that call-out cost because she didn't call the services herself. Anyway, more of your comments coming in relation to this. Hi, Greg. Is the question not what did the fire services actually do to the woman's car for £1,600? A lot of calls are made unnecessarily. Thanks for that, Oshin. And although the fire service are constantly abusing the system by turning up at collisions when they are not needed, well, that's an awful way to frame it. I know the point that you're trying to make, but there is a response, and I'll tell you, when you need it, you're glad there's that response, that you have different arms of the emergency services arriving. You need the fire service there potentially to allow the ambulance to do their job. So the fire service, I would reject. They're abusing the system, to be honest with you. They're not independent. This is the process, and as I say, if you were on the receiving end and you did need them, you would love to see these lads and ladies landing, although I don't think there's any ladies in the Donegal Fire Service. But anyway, this caller says it happened to a friend of mine recently who had a minor collision. It was a one-vehicle collision with no injuries. The person received a bill for over €1,000, which his insurance company refused to cover. On the same issue, sure, if you don't have the money to pay, they can't take blood out of a stone, full stop. Another, it really takes us back to the conversation of buying cheap insurance online and not being covered for anything. Yep, interesting, actually. I was thinking as he was speaking of that convo we had at the end of last week. How do they reach that amount? 1,580, they're good crack. I think you've written down 15,000. It's 1,580. What about all the people climbing Errigal and Muckish and all the people that get caught out on the water? Who pays for all of them call-outs? Interesting, again, this widens the conversation, I'm not sure. In terms of Errigal and Muckish, it's a voluntary group that would primarily be called out, wouldn't it? Donegal Mountain Rescue. But what happens if the 118 is dispatched? I don't know the story. Maybe this is an exclusive fire service charge applied by the council. In response to the charges you're talking about, I was charged $2,500 for the fire brigade to stay at the scene of my collision until the road was cleared because there was no guards available. They say it's ridiculous. Once you call 999, they're all activated, says a listener. Alerted. It seems guards, ambulance, fire, etc. I thought if you didn't make the call and a good Samaritan did, then you were covered. Has this changed? But it's like health insurance, isn't it? Every car insurance policy is going to have changes. It might just be the case that this lady's was as it was laid out there. So I can't speak across the board because all insurance companies can be different. So when the fire services were called out 100 times at Halloween, who pays for that? Interesting question there. On the issue of immigration, morning, I have neighbours from Ukraine, lovely people here a few years now. They came here fleeing the war and managed to bring their car with them and never has anything on the windshield. They went and bought a new car and took the number plates off their car from Ukraine and stuck them on their new car. But sure, why not when you can get away with it? Rant over, love the show. Thank you. Their insurance in their home country covers them. And the rule, I don't know if there are insurance discs in the Ukraine, but if they're continuing to get their insurance from the Ukraine, they wouldn't have to put them on their windscreen, as far as I'm aware, unless that's the way it's done in Ukraine. Switching number plates from one vehicle to another is a significant no-no, I would imagine. But you never know. There might be provision in the rules to allow for that. It would be a fresh one on me. And randomly, and this is why I love this show, we're going to talk about spuds. Because Tessie says, Greg, when I boil potatoes and check them, I find one half of an individual spud is well boiled and the remaining half very hard and definitely not boiled. And to leave them cooking long enough boiled, half goes into porridge. Anyone discover the same? Thanks. Right, so as I say, you never know what's going to be texting. So this call is boiling spuds. They're finding that half of the spud is cooked, half of it isn't. And when they continue to boil the spud to get the uncooked half cooked, then the cooked half turns into porridge. Does that make sense? What's going on there? How can a spud in the same thing of water? Are they just bad sports? I don't know. As I say, we talk about anything on this show. Tessie has problems with her spuds. Have you any reason as to why that might be? Any solutions for her? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. We mentioned DJ Carey, and he's due to be sentenced today. A caller says, what I can't understand about DJ Carey is that nobody's talking about the 9.5 million euro he owes AIB Bank. If any non-GEA legal defaulted on that, they'd be in jail for that. Never mind what he's done since. He should be in jail. I also agree with you in terms of people getting away scot-free for child abuse imagery. Thanks, Stephen. It is a complex one. And, you know, perhaps maybe sitting in this seat, it's not perhaps fair to conflate one crime with another crime. It's just, I don't know, it's to imprison people for financial matters, even if it's defraud, but not for the other stuff. It doesn't rest easy for me. But then again, maybe I'm not recognising the complexity of all this stuff, but it's just an honest feeling, and I spat it out. Right, now, Transparency International Ireland has published its Speak Up report for 2025. And there's quite an interesting series of findings contained within. We're joined on the programme to discuss this by John Devitt, Chief Executive with Transparency International Ireland. Good morning to you, John. Thank you for your time.
Good morning to you too.
Can I ask about the organisation first before we dig into the report? People may not be aware that it exists, so maybe you could give us a brief outline.
Sure, yeah. Transparency International is part of an international network of organisations dedicated to fighting corruption around the world. But we have chapters in around 110 countries. And in Ireland, we have been lobbying for open government and measures aimed at tackling corruption for the last 20 years. We also run a helpline, a free helpline for people reporting concerns of wrongdoing, and also offer free legal advice through the helpline and access to psychological supports to people. Some time ago, we worked with Maurice McCabe, for example, the Garda whistleblower, and providing support to him and advice during his ordeal. And we supported around 3,000 people so far, offering around 1.5 million euros worth of free legal advice to people. We're part funded, just for the sake of full disclosure, part funded by the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform and the Department of Justice. Much of our money or funding has also come from the European Commission and private donations as well. So we're a not-for-profit organisation, if people are wondering what our how we're organised. And our goal is, as I said, to stop corruption in all its forms.
So you talked about a very high-profile case there in terms of former Garda McCabe, but that would be, you know, and I understand why you pulled that out, because people would recognise the name and understand the work that you were doing. What's the other end of it, though? Maybe I say lower level, but this is all subjective, and for the person involved, it couldn't be any higher, right? But just to give me a sense of sort of the range of when we talk of fraud or mistreatment or what have you that you're covering.
Well, the helpline will provide support to anyone, irrespective of where they're working or what type of concern they're reporting. Our goal is to provide information such that and guidance such that people can make a decision for themselves as to whether they should report or how they might go about dealing with an issue at work arising from a report. And we provide support to people working in the health sector, education, social services, police, anywhere really, and dealing with any type of wrongdoing that is covered by legislation. People might not be familiar with the Protected Disclosures Act. Mm-hmm. The law was introduced in 2014 to provide blanket rights to people reporting wrongdoing, irrespective of where they worked. Prior to that, people working in the banking sector, for example, had no legal rights to speak up, or very few. And in the wake of the banking crisis, government understood that they needed to see that people had some legal protection in speaking up. So it's not to say, however, that those who are reporting will always come out on the other side without suffering in some way.
Well, that's it. That's what we hear, that, you know, whilst the you know, the protected disclosures are there, and, you know, in the area of health, I can think right off the top of my head where people have blown the whistle, and those that they've blown the whistle on have sailed off into the sunset whilst their careers have been, you know, negatively affected.
Yeah, I should add that most people who do report don't report that they've suffered. However, too large and big a number of people have reported that they have suffered negative consequences. Remarkably, the findings suggest that being female is associated with a 16% increase in the likelihood of suffering negative consequences. In our Integrity of Work survey conducted in 2023 with around 1,000 people, found that 50% of 50% of those who reported that they suffered negative consequences were women, 37% were men. So there's a lot of work to be done in Irish workplaces to see that women can be assured that when they speak up, they'll be taken seriously when they do so. Uh-huh. And this points to another issue highlighted in our survey data and in our work with people calling our helpline. And that is that too few people have confidence in their employers that action will be taken. Employers seem to be satisfied that they would take action if wrongdoing was reported to them. Employees don't share that same confidence, and that's particularly so for women. So there's a lot of work to be done to put in place policies and procedures at organizational level, whether you're working in the public or private sector, action is taken when someone reports.
So interesting. I'll ask a bit more about the survey itself, though. Is this for, you know, business leaders or managers to take note as well? You know, I mean, obviously, sometimes people can shoot from the hip or try and approach these things casually, but it's very much in the business's decision to have a process in place to deal with anything that comes up, because you could end up paying the price down the line anyway.
Any employer who takes risk seriously will have policies and procedures in place. However, what we notice, or what we see from the survey data, is that just over 30%, less than 40% of employers have policies and procedures in place to deal with concerns of wrongdoing. And our data also suggests that the biggest factor in determining a positive outcome is the availability of supports externally. So it's important that employers are both able to receive and act on concerns, but also that they point their staff, their workers, to external supports, whether that's a trade union, a lawyer, or Transparency International Ireland Speak Up helpline. That is the safest way to see that people report without suffering any negative consequences, and to see that action is taken in response to those concerns.
Okay. Right, so the Speak Up Report 2025, you picked out one highlight there. Actually, sorry, I just want to ask a question if the answer is there. Do we know from any trends or investigation as to why women who blow the whistle face negative consequences more than men?
I think there's a legacy issue here. Women are much more likely to suffer discrimination in the workplace, harassment, bullying. There's a great deal of data available and research conducted into the experiences of women in workplaces, not just an Irish phenomenon either. So the deck is stacked against women in workplaces to begin with. So it's no surprise to find that they will have less confidence than their male counterparts that something will be done when they do report wrongdoing. And it's important that we are able to identify the problem at organizational level. So where information is shared, where protected disclosures are made, employers should be disaggregating the data. In other words, they should be able to tell how many women, how many men are reporting, track their experiences, and use that to improve their systems. They also need to, as I said, make their workers aware of the availability of supports. Mm-hmm. and also be welcoming more of anonymous disclosures. One of the biggest factors determining whether people have confidence in an employer's systems is the ability to be able to share information anonymously in the first instance, so as to build trust with the recipient of
but
that.
But the recipient then has to make sure there's very clear and fair guidelines in place to
exactly.
pursue that.
Exactly, and so then they are then able to share the information about their identity. So, as I said, there's a lot of information available on this. People want to go to our website, speakup.ie.
Okay, and one question, you know, my default would have been you raise a concern, it doesn't go your way, you feel you're being impacted, you contact you guys. But in reality, the data shows that you're far better off being preemptive, aren't you, to whether it is the likes of your organisations or another, to get external advice or engage externally before raising your concerns. That can limit the negative consequences.
Yeah.
Or reduce them, sorry.
Data here and in the UK suggests that the vast majority of people, somewhere in the region of 90% of people, want to report internally first. They want to report to a line manager, you know, a compliance officer, whoever it might be, because they want it dealt with quickly, and they want to make sure that they whatever wrongdoing is highlighted is addressed. However, they also want to be able to seek advice on reporting in the first instance. So employers need to make their staff available of the their staff aware of the availability of these supports before they report. That advice will be given in confidence. It doesn't mean that we'll encourage people to report to the press or to go on social media and air their company's dirty linen in public. What we want to do is make sure that those staff, those workers, have all the information they need to make an informed decision, so that when they report to their line manager or senior management, they can do so safely and in the knowledge that what they're reporting is actually backed up with information, and that they're aware of their rights too.
And often this is to for a smoother running of the organisation, a better working environment, potentially better customer experience. You know, it's not something I think people should be afraid of. Thank you so much. Where can we see this report if we want to? There's a lot in it, okay? So where can we access it if we want to look through it a bit more?
Yeah, well, we're launching the report at noon today.
Okay.
So if people want to log on to integrityatwork.ie, they'll find the details there. And they can find the report itself on transparency.ie. So they'll either be able to join us this afternoon or log on and find the report there. We'll also make the recording of the event available on YouTube. So if people want to find us there, they can do so as well.
No doubt, a busy morning, so we appreciate your time. Look after yourself.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Thanks a million.
That's John Devitt there, Chief Executive with Transparency International Ireland. Okay, so Tessie was in contact with us a little earlier on. It's not the greatest problem in the world, but she's frustrated. She's boiling her spuds, and when she prods them, half the spud seems perfectly cooked, the other half undercooked. And as she continues to boil them, when the undercooked side reaches the cooked status, the previously cooked side is overdone. And she's going, what's going on here? This is, as I say, Tessie. Right. Now, Charlie Doherty is of Doherty Potatoes in Burt. Hi, Charlie.
Craig, how are you getting on?
I'm doing good. Didn't think I was going to be talking about half-cooked spuds today, but you know what, Charlie? That's what we do here, public service broadcasting at its best. So what's going on?
Yeah. It's mostly be down to, let's say, extremely dry weather in the summertime when they're growing. And if they're too dry for too long, they take this glassy centre. That's what they call it, this glassy centre in them. And it just won't bother. They're bad spuds, really. Now, I would imagine the spuds come from more down the country. They had a drier summer down there than they had Donegal. We had a really good growing summer, but we had plenty of moisture along with it. Like, you know, and spuds grew well. But down the country, I heard of a few issues down there with that glassy centre. And they had a longer summer. I'm not 100% sure, but I'd imagine that's the came from down the country.
Right, the first solution then, Charlie, would be to buy Donegal spuds then?
Local spuds, yeah, that would be a good idea to start with, right? Yeah.
And keep doing it, as you would say, keep doing it, yeah.
Exactly,
It's an interesting phenomenon. So, like, are they just bad spuds for boiling? Like, I mean, or are they just bad spuds full stop?
Yeah, there's nothing you can, it was just down to the season, like, you know, and there's nothing you can do about it. Like, whoever has them would need to be just dumping them for cattle feed, like, because there's no way of curing them or, you know, improving them. They are what they are, like, and that's the way they're going to be, like, you know. The problem with maybe the farmer doesn't even know them if he hasn't cooked them himself, you know. So, like, it's only when you actually boil them, they look perfect, they look 100%, but it's only when you actually go to boil them that you'll find this, you know. But no, that's the issue anyway, like, you know.
That's remarkable, fascinating stuff. And I suppose you get good and bad years. It's that type of a product.
Yeah, you're tied to the seasons, like, you know. I mean, we still have spuds to harvest yet. You know, we had a fair run there a couple of weeks ago. There's a good week, and we got most of them in, but they're still a bit to dig yet, so they're out in the fields yet now. But hopefully, we'll get a spell yet before the year's out, you know, and get them dug. But that's always spuds is always a high risk to grow. Like, you know, there's all kinds of issues can crop up, you know, because you're up against the elements, you know, of the weather.
Frost would be your enemy now, would it?
Frost is the big one. Yeah, like, with the wet, we can handle the wet as long as, you know, they're not flooded, you know. But the frost now would be the big one, all right. So, I mean, hopefully, well, climate change maybe is maybe a good thing for us. We won't get the frost, hopefully, you know.
So
you know, the trouble is we get too much moisture. That's what I mean.
So as a spud grower, then we had a decent balance with dry weather and ground moisture and ground temp and all that kind of stuff then.
Donegal, yeah, well, Donegal definitely was an excellent growing year. We got them in there; they were a good spring. We got them in early, and then there's plenty of heat during the year and enough moisture as the year went on. Like, you know, so, but I mean, that can be at the same time that can be your Achilles heel, because we have good yields across the board, even down the country and even in Europe. And that there's good yields, so prices are not looking too good. Like, you know. And that's another thing I was going to say to you is, yeah, like, there's a lot of chat this last few weeks about prices, you know, prices of food rising, and it's up so many percent. Potatoes actually is down in price this year, like, you know.
But that's as a that's as a grower. Are they down in the supermarkets as well, price wise?
Well, I would say they are back a bit, all right, but maybe not where they should be. And actually, the big one would actually be on the catering business. You know, your peeled spot. I don't know if they're coming back much. If you take your spuds on the plate, that your mashed potatoes on the plate, I'd say the farmer's lucky to be getting. He'd be lucky to get 10p out of that. Like, you know,
wow,
you know what's in there.
If even
like, you know, because the prices were really on the floor there.
But it's a cruel game, Charlie, isn't it? Because if you have a good year, everyone else has a good year, Europe has a good year, and next thing, you know, that year where you should be banking it, the price of the raw material goes down, yet your input costs are still the same, you know, and yet you could have a year struggling,
yeah.
And the prices go through the roof, but you don't have enough product to benefit
from
that.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's, I suppose...
Are you mad in spuds, Charlie? What are you doing in spuds? You must be mad, are you?
I'll tell you, if a gambler was a farmer, he'd be growing spuds, like, because it is a very gambling crop, like, you know.
Mm.
And, like, you can make good money on it, but it's when you're struggling, but you could lose your shirt in it very handy, too. And this year... looks like we could be losing our shirt, to be honest with you.
I hope not. Okay.
You know?
Yeah, well, listen, Charlie,
well, hope for the best
continued success and the best chance of getting good spuds, actually. And we're not just saying this is in the Northwest here, because the weather lent itself best. Charlie,
exactly,
thanks for
that.
All right. Go ahead.
Support the local as well, yeah.
Support the local, exactly.
Yeah.
And cuts down the carbon footprint, because you're not having to bust them all over the place. Thanks, Charlie. Charlie Doherty of Doherty's Potatoes there. An interesting insight. And what is interesting as well, randomly, we've been very busy on the phones, just in case Shelley thought she was on her own. You're not. A caller says, yes, the same with my spuds. Some not cooked. That comes in from Patricia. Steaming the potatoes should cook them evenly. When boiling the potatoes in the pot, they shouldn't. They should be completely covered by water. If the potatoes are large, you could cut them in half. All right, maybe not a bad idea there. I noticed it too, says the listener. As someone who grew up in a farm, I think it's because they are from cold storage from last year. Another that's interesting, Greg, I mentioned this to my potato man at the weekend, and he was not happy and couldn't really give me an explanation for it. And another, I found that if I boil them, and once they're a little past parboiled, drain them, leave them a very small amount of water and put a bit of tinfoil over them. Continue to boil at a low heat. They will even out and you'll have a lovely potato, which really worked for me. Isn't it interesting, though? There's actually science to it. It's down to the weather. Boiling spuds, the size of the spuds. If you want to boil a large spud and also a small spud, cut them in half, make them all the same size so they all cook at the same time. Another spud's much better steamed than boiled. You won't have the bother then. Another, yes, the same with my spuds, some not cooked. Yeah, indeed, a lot of you experiencing the same. Re-spuds, drain, cover with a clean cloth or paper towel. Put them back on the lowest heat until fully cooked. I find a lot of blight in my potatoes, asks another. Why is this? And one more before the break. They are floury spuds. Very tasty, but need to be steamed because they're so floury. That comes in from breed. This glass centre, too, that we heard there is an interesting dynamic. Right, I am going to take our quarter to break a little early because that will clear the decks up to 11 o'clock to answer your questions about the local property tax. Because there are changes and the changes are confusing or people don't even know they're there. We're going to go through that. But keep your questions coming in. We've had loads. We can accommodate more. 086 60 25,000. Any questions about the local property tax? Louise Whelan is Assistant Principal, Local Property Tax, Vacant Home Tax with Revenue Commissioners. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Much for having me this morning.
Right, so what is happening to the LPT in terms of changes? Are the bans changing? Do we just need to reevaluate our properties or what's going on?
Yeah, so basically what's after happening is Revenue have written to 1.5 million customers in relation to the 2.2 million properties that are registered in the state. And what we're asking them to every customer to do is to determine the valuation band of their property as at the 1st of November 2025, to submit the return, including that valuation band by the 7th of November 2025, and within that return to either pay at that point or to make arrangements to pay for the 2026 period.
How do we value our property?
So the easiest way to value the property is to actually go online and to use the LPT portal, which is available. That's the easiest way to file your return and to value your property. Revenue does have an interactive tool available within the notes online, the information, and you can use that to help with valuing your property. We would ask that you do consider the condition and features of your own property. And the valuation tool is only a guide. You know, it's an average, an estimate of your property and the property within your own area. So what we would ask is that we would say there's no need to go on and get a professional valuation. It's not necessary. We would ask you to make a very fair assessment. It is a self-assessed tax. And maybe you can use the property price register and look at that and have a look at properties that have sold in your own area, similar to your own property. Have a look on DAFT or have a look on myhome.ie just to give you an idea. And as I said, it is a self-assessed tax. So we do ask people to give a fair valuation of their own property.
How do you factor in defective concrete blocks in the valuation of your property?
Yeah, so in relation, so obviously Donegal is one of those counties that qualifies for the defective concrete block exemption. So if you are actually one of those qualifying properties, so and how you will know that is if you've been approved by the Donegal County Council, or if an insurance company has will substantiate your claim, or if the builder of the property has taken, you know, has given some recognition in relation to the defective concrete block. So those are dealt with on a case-by-case basis. So what we would ask is that you make contact with us and it is possible to claim an exemption for the defective concrete block.
You don't actually have to be on the scheme potentially to claim that exemption?
Yes, you would have to be on the scheme.
What I don't understand about that is
there are a couple of...
You said just in earlier comments, you said to take into consideration the general condition of your building. Now, there might be those who are listening who are waiting to apply for the scheme or don't have the initial €700 to get the visual assessment. If you are being honest and you are assessing your property and you say the corners of my house are falling off, therefore my house is worthless, are you saying Revenue won't accept that as an honest determination of the condition of your property?
Now, all of these, like as I say, a lot of these cases are dealt with on a case-by-case basis. But like in terms of actually claiming the exemption, you do have to be on the scheme, just to be clear about
Of
that.
course. Well, I'm not about actually even factoring into the value of your property. Sorry, I maybe picked you up. Yeah, I understand the exemption, and you do, of course, need to be on the scheme for that, whether people agree with that or not. But I'm on about in terms of valuing your property in the bands. Okay, can you factor into the fact that your house would be in the lower band because it has defective concrete blocks, or you suspect it has, whereas ordinarily it might be in the higher or the very highest band for that matter? So is that a legitimate thing to put on the form to reduce the value of your property?
It is a legitimate thing to put on the form, but what we would ask is for all of those cases, if you have made any attempt or any sort of, if you have any paperwork just to support your claim, and you can submit that to Revenue to support your valuation if any questions are asked at a later date.
Okay, so do you need that on hand in case there are questions are asked at a later date, or does that need to be submitted at the time of the valuation?
No, it doesn't need to be submitted at the time of the valuation. What we would ask, and this goes for all valuations of properties, if you can keep any supporting documentation that, like, whatever the case may be, to support how you have valued your property and why you have valued it at in that particular valuation band, then all of that will be taken into account if Revenue have any questions at a later date.
And it is the sale price, that the potential sale price that you're...
It is. Okay. It's market value, yeah. So the potential sale price of your property as at the 1st of November.
So what are the bans at the moment?
Yeah, so the bans at the moment have been have actually been widened. So, and that is to take into consideration the price, the property price increase across the country. So we'll say, so if you even take band one has expanded from up to €200,000, that's now gone up to €240,000.
From what's the lowest end of that? Sorry, is the lowest end of that zero?
Zero. Yeah. Okay. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And then obviously, if you take say band two, which is would be another very popular band, would be that is now it's gone from 200,000 starting to 240,000, and that goes up to 315,000. And that comes with a charge of €235 plus the local Donegal now would have the 15% local adjustment factor. So that would have to be added on as well.
What happens if I do nothing?
Well, if you do nothing, it is a self-assessed tax, as I say. If your property is already registered, you will be hearing from us at, you know, once all the returns have been filed. We will be writing out to you again. If you have never registered, we would encourage you to absolutely register your property and to contact us and to make arrangements, and maybe we can assist you with that.
A couple of people are texting in saying that they did this and there was no increase in their tax. Have they done something wrong? We're not getting into the politics of it, but there was some opposition politicians suggesting that lots and lots of people will pay more. We're not getting into that because that's not what this is about. But what percentage of people might find themselves having to pay more local property tax, broadly speaking?
The whole idea of the widening of the bands and the reduction of the rates. So we'll say the bands widened to take into consideration an over 25% increase across the country. And then the rate of local property tax has actually been decreased to 0.0906%. So that's gone down as well. So what the whole idea was that we were hoping not to put an extra burden on the customers. There are some bands that obviously if your property has increased hugely over the in certain areas that you may end up going up a band. But it also means that some customers, if you take in Donegal, even for instance, if your house was worth 400,000 in 2021, you would have been paying €466, including the local adjustments factor. But for the 2026 charge, you'll be paying 428. So that's a reduction of 9%. So, but if you were in the lower bracket, you would pay an increase of €5. Mm.
Revenue are charged with collecting this tax and administering it, but from an official position, is there a position that you have or within Revenue as to what the LPT is actually for, what the tax is for?
Yeah, so all of the LPT tax that is collected is paid over to the local government management agency, and they are the management agency for the county councils across the whole country. So all of the LPT, so revenue, while it is the collection agent, it doesn't actually hold on to the local property tax, and it doesn't go into the daily exchequer figures. That money is paid over daily over to the local management agency.
And
So
it's up to the local authorities to do with that what they want.
yeah, well, it's the management agency, the local authority management agency, they divvy that out according to the different counties, and there's a number of different criteria used for how much each county council gets. But yeah, in effect, it's the county councils to administer
At its
what they
discretion,
want to
okay.
do with that those funds.
My father died a couple of years ago. The house is still in his name. Revenue want the PPS number. Do we use his PPS number? But then it risks, are you the person liable?
Yeah, so what that is basically the family, once probate is taken out, the ownership of the property will change hands. So the family have a number of different options available to them there. They can make contact with us, and they can defer the payment until probate is settled, or they can make arrangements to pay through their solicitor or the executor of the will. And that those funds then can come out of the estate of the deceased person.
How do you self-value your home, says the listener? If it's 80 plus years old and needs refurbishment, just because it's big, it doesn't mean it's valuable. You honestly value it, I presume it will be your response. You say, well, what is the value of this property in its current condition if you were to put it to market?
Yeah, and that's what we are asking people to do, is to self-evaluate. Now, I know some people may wish to get a professional valuation, but as I said already, it's not something that we encourage, or we don't want to put extra expense on customers. But we do ask that if they were to put it to market in the morning, what would they think the property would fetch at? And if they can have any sort of support and documentation that can support that, 100% hold on to that. Just in case there's ever a query.
Keep the receipts
And just on the
effectively,
other
isn't it?
hand of that is, if you have purchased a property recently, and you know the purchase price is the valuation of the property.
If you received the letter for the LPT and the valuation is the same as you would value it, do you need to fill out the form or is it okay to just let it go?
No, you'd need to fill out the form. So this is because it's a new valuation, every single property has to be revalued. So what we need you to do is to confirm that valuation. So if you have received an estimate, and anybody who has received a letter, it is just an estimate that's on the form. What we're asking you to do is, revenue have given you an estimate, and we're asking you to confirm that or to increase or decrease it depending on the band, the valuation band you fall into, and assign the amount that you're due to pay.
I always pay the LPT in the post office at the start of January by producing the LPT letter. So what happens if I have to send back the same letter this week?
Yeah, so you do actually have to. So even if you do go on to pay in the post office, you still need to send revenue or return, and that return will cover you for the next 5 years. So this is the valuation as at the 1st of November 2025, and that return will cover you for the next 5 years, okay, up until 2030. And so you still have to let revenue know that that is the valuation of your property, and you need to file a return. And the easiest way to do that is online. If you can't do that online, what I encourage you to do is to phone our phone line, and that's on 01 738 3626, or send us an email via My Inquiries, or you can post us a letter on PO Box. It's a free post number, PO Box number 1, and that's in Limerick.
Where do you get your property ID and PIN?
If you have a property, every correspondence will have your property ID and PIN on the letter.
Okay.
If you don't have a letter, and you need, just make contact with us, and we'll be able to assist you, and we'll give you your property ID and PIN. Or you can actually go online and self-serve, and the PIN will be sent out to you automatically.
I've a new self-build since August. I've registered for LPT following a letter, but no follow-up since with numbers, PIN, etc. Do I need to take any action?
Yeah, what I would ask is if you could try and make contact with us. And but once just to reassure, once people have made contact with us, you know, we will get back to everybody. We are obviously this week is extremely busy, and I know it's extremely busy on the phone lines, but what we would ask is that you make contact with us. And once you've initiated that contact and sent in your query, we will get back to you at some stage.
And very finally, just to clarify, exemptions from LTB, LPT, if you have defective concrete blocks, it's only if you've been accepted onto the scheme, is that correct?
Yes, if you've been accepted onto the scheme, or you have a successful insurance claim. If you go onto the revenue website, there's a load of information on there. If you're unsure, again, please contact us, send in your query, either via my inquiries again or give us a phone call. But yes, most definitely. And it's only for if you're within, as you say, for your own county in Donegal, we'll say. They do qualify for the scheme, but for any border counties that may not qualify for the scheme, if you claim the scheme, you won't be, you know, you will be able to go online and claim an exemption, but once we review that exemption, you know, it won't be successful.
Okay, thanks for your time. I do appreciate it. That's
All
Laura.
right, thanks very much.
Bye bye. Laura Whelan there, Assistant Principal, Local Property Tax, Vacant Home Tax with Revenue Commissioners. Back after the break.